This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest on today's show is comedian Paula Poundstone, who's elevated improvisational whimsy to a high art. In addition to her singular stand-up gifts, she reinvents her act every night, weaving in things that happened to her that day or in the audience that night. Poundstone is a long-standing, highly popular panelist on NPR's quiz show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Veteran comic with a towering pile of notable television credits, she also hosts a weekly comedy podcast called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. She regularly performs at theaters across the country, including upcoming Florida appearances this Friday, February 13th at Glazer Hall for the Performing Arts in Palm Beach, and March 13th at the Bill Hymer Capitol Theater in Clearwater. And Poundstone is a devoted, longtime cat enthusiast, to put it mildly. She's long laced her routines with the cat stories, often based on observations and misadventures with a sizable flock of felines sharing her home. The last time I interviewed her, she and her family were living with 16 cats. In today's conversation, we'll aim to get the current cat count and explore any number of other topics, some serious, including how prescient Poundstone was many, many years ago about the serious risk posed for children by the use of cell phones and other electronic devices. So cats, computers, and more. I'm going to speak with Paula Poundstone here in just a moment on Talking Animals on WMNF. Programming note, though, in just over 1 week, on February 18th, WMNF's Winter Fun Drive begins, and I'll be raising money on Talking Animals on that very day, Wednesday, February 18th. I'm asking for your hope, typically assigned a giant fundraising goal, and that's no exception this time around. It's a big one, maybe my biggest ever. So I've learned over the years that the only real prospect of reaching that kind of big goal is to receive pledges before the Fun Drive show. I'm hoping you might consider donating, ideally before the 18th. Any amount you can swing would be fantastic. And again, with Trump swooping away funding for public broadcasting, success in these fund drives has become more important than ever. As always, I'll be offering some exclusive Talking Animals thank you gifts for pledges at various levels, ranging from amazing tickets to assorted comedy shows, special pet hair removal gloves, glow-in-the-dark dog collars, more safely walking your dog at night, dusk, early morning, etc., and a gorgeous, colorful painting of two smiling pitties by local artist Dan Anderson. So, going to arrange for those to be your gift for your pledge in support of Talking Animals and especially WMNF. So please visit WMNF.org in the upper right-hand corner. Click on Donate Now. Follow the prompts there, and ultimately you'll get a drop-down menu where you can designate a show. Please select TLA Talking Animals for their show and credited with your donation. Meanwhile, coming up later on today's program, I'll speak with Todd Northcutt, Senior Vice President at Pet Supermarket, about the one-day cat adoption event hosting the organization Tampa Bay Strays at Pet Supermarket Lutz, location on US 41, this Friday, February 13th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. More on this when I talk with Todd Northcutt later in today's program. Right now, though, let's get into our conversation with Paula Poundstone with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WM, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Paula Poundstone back to Talking Animals on WMF. Good morning, Paula.
Hey, Duncan, how are you?
I've had better mornings. I don't know if anybody mentioned it as they connected you, but I had a car problem. I ran over something that I couldn't avoid, and my tire blew out and got shredded. So I'm actually speaking to you from Johnny's Automotive in Lake Wales.
Oh, heavens. No, I haven't talked to anybody. Geez.
I thought it was worthy of a sort of Poundstonian adventure, because I remember back in the day, you know, you talk about driving somewhere and you took the turn east when it should have been west. And next thing you know, there's a hilarious hunk of comedy about it. So one day I'll probably have something semi-hilarious to say about this.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, no, I used to have a 65 Mustang named Dave, who was in the shop all the time.
And Dave's no longer with us, I take it.
Dave was eventually totaled.
Okay.
Yeah, he another car just rolled into him in San Francisco on a hill. Somebody didn't curb their wheels or something, and I don't know. I was not involved other than I lost my car. I loaned it to somebody and got totaled. It's so good to be with you.
Yeah, it's so great to talk to you again, and I look forward to discussing all kinds of things. But first, this is an animal show, and I'm sort of constitutionally obligated to talk about animals, or at least ask about them. So
yes.
Can we talk cats? Can we talk about it? Well, how many cats currently share your home? Let's start there, I guess.
I have 11.
Wow. Okay. That's still pretty sizable. I think I mentioned in the opening there that last time we spoke, I think it was like 15 or 16. So
I did have 16 at one time. Yeah. But I think of the group of 16, there's probably only one of those still alive, because they don't live forever.
Yeah. Sadly.
So, yeah. Currently I have 11. I was down to my census was down to 8 until the summer before the election that I wish Kamala Harris had won. And I was so stressed out during that summer that I just succumbed I thought, you can't be miserable around a kitten. It's just not possible. So I went and I got a kitten for the first time in years. I mean, I still had a lot of cats, but I hadn't gotten a new kitten in years. And I went and I got a kitten. I was so lucky. I got this gorgeous male just from the shelter, gorgeous male. He's a Siamese lynx, big, just beautiful. And I brought him home. I stuck him in my bathroom with some food and water and a litter box and would sit in there doing my work and stuff while he was in there. I'd stay in there, pet him and talk to him. And it made me feel so much better that because I don't put him out with a gen pup when I first get him. I let him.
Yeah, I was wondering how that works, because even with populations of far fewer cats, that can be tricky introducing a new cat.
Yeah. Well, so he stayed in there for, I don't know, for a little while. But after a day or two of being just delighted having this new kitten, I thought, boy, if one is good, then two is going to be fantastic. So I go back to the animal shelter. And again, just so lucky. I get the cutest little black kitten. And I bring her home and I stick her in the bathroom with this other kitten. And they, I would sit in there with them working on the computer and they, jump all over each other and chase their tails around and then sleep really hard together. And just fantastic. So a few days go by and, I'm so enjoying having these kittens. A few days go by and I think, you know what? I go back to the animal shelter. And they show me a litter of three. And I'm like, well, we don't want to break them up, do we? So I bring home these three kittens.
Wow.
And they were just fantastic. So now it's September. And I think to myself, I'm like, man, if I just had one more kitten, just one more. I just need topped off, right? If one more and I'm good to go and I don't need any more. So, and I think, well, I'll have to wait a whole year if I don't do it now because, kitten season.
Yeah.
And so I go back to the shelter one more time and they're showing me kittens and there weren't, there wasn't like a huge selection at this point. And I'm kind of looking, they were on the top row of cages. And I'm kind of looking, I'm like, well, I have that kind, I have that kind, I have that kind. And while I'm there, there's another woman there who's looking to bring home an adult cat. No, I never brought home an adult cat before because I didn't think they would merge well. And plus I love kittens. So there's another woman looking to get an adult cat. But we're standing in the same place. And so on the bottom row of cages, they open a cage to show this woman a cat and out waddles the largest cat I've ever seen in my life. And he's not a Maine Coon. He's just fat. And
yeah, I think waddles tipped it off probably.
Yeah. Yeah. And he there was something about him that was kind of magnetic, actually. He was, First of all, I was struck that he didn't, you know, he didn't cower in the cage when they opened it. He wasn't like squirrely or weird. He didn't run away. It was only later I realized he couldn't run. But, he kind of went his way around our legs while we were standing there talking. And there was something, I mean, there was something sort of awesome about how large he was. But additionally, I don't know, he had personality right off the bat. So, I don't know, I said to the lady that was looking, I said, you know, I think you should get that cat. That's a great cat. And then I just sort of wandered away. So I get home and I can't stop thinking about that cat, partly because he's going to die. That's just too damn fat. You know, it's just not good. So I call the shelter and I say, you know, that fat cat. And the lady on the phone goes, oh, yes. And I said, well, it looked like there was somebody who might take him. But if she doesn't take him, I will. And she says, well, I'll call you back. She calls back. She goes, oh, he's still here. So I jump in the car. I drive back over. And you know how when you get a cat or a kitten, they often give it to you in the shelter in a box that's designed for this purpose?
Yeah.
It the top of the box folds into a handle.
Right.
There's like breathing.
Cat to go.
Say that again.
That cat to go.
Yes. Yes, exactly. There's breathing holes all around the box, little illustrations of pets on the outside. So I named him Larry, by the way. And so they bring Larry out to me in this box. There is fur coming out of every hole in the box. That's how big Larry is. Yeah. Larry was wearing the box like it came from Lululemon. And I take him and they're like, yeah, you know, he's wedged into the box. He can't really move in the box. But, you know, I didn't live far away. So I, you know, put the box in the car, I drive home. So I get, by this time, there's no kittens in the bathroom anymore. So I stick Larry in the bathroom. And one of the first things I did was weigh him. And the way I did it was I weigh myself and then I gather Larry up in my arms and, cause you had to gather Larry back then.
Yeah.
He didn't like to be held. I mean, it might be partly because he wasn't particularly comfortable with me yet, but also, I just think there was no comfortable position for him because he was so large. So I weigh him. He was 23.9 pounds.
Oh my goodness.
And he's a black and white. And I happened to be back in the shelter for something else entirely later, like days later. And I say, you know, that fat cat was 23.9 pounds. And they said, oh, then he lost weight since we took him in. They said that when they got him, he was 26 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
So I at one point, when he's still in the bath, I bring him in a ball with a bell in it because I'm like, we have to begin our weight loss journey. So I bring him in a ball with a bell in it, and he gives me, a look, what's come to be known as Larry's look that says, you know, I don't play, but thank you.
Yeah.
I gave him at the time low calorie food. And just like my other cats, I fed him dry food in the morning and canned food at night. So one of the first things I did was I took a pie plate, I tied a shoestring to it, a couple of shoestrings actually tied together, and I put some dry food in the pan, and I dragged the pan around behind me, and Larry has to like run to catch up with his food, and.
Wow.
And, you know, that worked okay. And then I was like, you know what? I have a treadmill that I don't use either in my bedroom. So at some point I take him to my bedroom and I put some of his disgusting canned food in a pie plate. I bring it in. I hold it for him on the treadmill. And there was no pace. Slow enough really for him to be able to
except off.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, he scrambled as best he could because he's very food motivated. It's really mostly what he thinks about. So he scrambles to keep up, and he got some food, and I thought, well, you know, good enough. You know, we'll train. He'll learn to do it over time, right? So the following night, turns out Larry's very smart. So the following night, I take him back into my bedroom, back to the treadmill, put some food, you know, in the pie plate. This disgusting canned food. I hate canned food. And I turn I push the button, and the first thing Larry does is take his giant Larry paw and scoop out this grotesque food and dump it on the tread. Wow. And then he sits down. And the treadmill pushes them both off onto my bedroom floor, where Larry just engorges himself in food. Literally, Duncan, this is how Larry eats. Nom, nom, nom.
Well, you don't get to be that size without eating with gusto.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a passionate thing, him and food. So I'm like, okay, well, that idea is out. So then I have this idea that, the first thing I did, I guess, was I would take in the morning a handful of his dry food, and I would walk around the house and make him follow me. And then I would give him one piece at a time. And the woman who took care of the cats when I'm gone, or took care of my pets when I'm gone, you know, she was following this procedure, but she hated walking around the house. And so she changed it to we bring Larry into the living room. My living room I live in a small house, and the living room has two short hallways off of it that have doors at the end. So we bring him into the living room. We close the doors. We let maybe one or two other cats stay in with him. And then we throw one piece at a time around the living room, and Larry has to run and get it. And the reason we let one or two other cats stay in is that so that Larry understands if he doesn't haul ass, he's not getting that food. And I can't really remember any longer. I mean, I'm sure I have a video about it, but I can't really remember any longer what his original reaction was to doing that. But I can tell you now, and I can even tell you how many days I've had him, because I keep it written down. But I've had him for like 400 and something days now. I can tell you now, Larry loves chasing his food. His tail flicks all around. He especially likes it if I bounce it. He hits it so that it goes further. You know, he'll deflect it at so that he can run and get it some more. He's just delighted by the whole experience. And I used to make videos about him. In the beginning, I did it almost every day. And as time went by, I did it less and less. And I haven't done it at all for a little while now. But they're on.
Well, Larry still seems prominent on the website, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. The last time I weighed Larry, he was 11 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
He has what I call his beach body now. And there's even a little bit of Larry merch. I sell Larry water bottles, and I sell Larry and I Love Democracy T-shirts. And I tell that story on stage many nights, and I'm usually not too far into the story before I say even the name Larry, before I get to the part where I say, you know, I name him Larry. At least a handful of people in the audience yell out, "Larry!"
Yeah, no, he seems like he's a high profile cat for sure.
Yeah, I was right about. I'm sure that every cat is different, but Larry has definitely caused some imbalance in the cat group. Because one of the male kittens that I got No, a mail kitten that I got during the stay at home order, who's now, you know, a giant panther of a cat. He and Larry don't get along particularly well. They're always vying for who's in charge. And so, you know, it's a little, I always tell people, it's sort of like primary season, but not as nasty. But outside of that, it's fantastic.
So when Larry came, one of my questions about you, for you with all the cats that come and go, is when you adopted those kittens, I assume you named them all. But when they, if a cat comes that's already been around for a little bit, do they retain the name that they were given before they came to your house?
I don't think anybody knew what Larry's original name was.
Oh,
and
okay.
I might have changed it anyways. But you know, at the shelter, they name the cats, and yeah. You know, they name if they name everything. I'm usually not too in sync with the names that they give animals, so I usually rename. And in Larry's case, I did rename. They called him like Squeak or something, and I'm like, I'm not calling him Squeak.
Okay.
So I named him Larry, and he actually knows his name better than any of my other cats because he's so responsive to food.
Well, also you said he was kind of a smart guy too.
Yeah, I think he's a very smart cat actually. And now, you know, he was a little bit, he wasn't a real snuggler in the beginning, but he really is now. And some of that may, you know, it doesn't all have to do with weight loss. I mean, some of it's just, I'm sure that, it took him a little while to get comfortable here. Cause I have to separate him out a lot. For example, when I feed the cats their canned food at dinner, I don't give Larry, low-cal canned food anymore. He doesn't really need it, and it's too hard to find it in the store, blah blah blah, and it's just it's expensive, so I just feed him with the other cats. He just eats the same canned food that they eat. The problem is he's so excited about getting his food that he fights. You know, there's just all this hissing and yowling as I'm putting the food out. And so I've had to separate him out and put him in my room until the food's down on the floor. And then I open my door for him to run out. I made a video of one time, just him, how fast he runs from my room to get to, you know, to get to the canned food with the others. He really is food motivated. Oh, what I forgot to tell you, Duncan, is that at some point when I was still working on how to get him to lose weight, I because I had been making these videos and posting them, you know, people would write to me and with one suggestion or the other. And a bunch of people wrote suggesting I get him a cat wheel, which I had never heard of or seen before. But of course, as soon as I looked it up, I'm like, we must have a cat wheel.
And for those of you listening who might not be familiar, can you describe what the cat wheel is?
Yeah, it's like a hamster wheel.
Okay.
Same concept, big wheel. Except for obviously it's big, and it's made of plastic. But the way that the inside of it, the track where they run, is carpeted. So that they can get traction, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to run on it. And Larry, for whom I bought the cat wheel, Larry will lay on it, but he wouldn't possibly run. And and when he's laying on it, if any other cat comes near, he hisses and whacks at them, which I feel, well, okay, that's some exercise. But the cats from that litter of three that I got that summer love the cat wheel. They do some distance on it, usually at night mostly.
Wow, that's great though. I mean, because it's really working as intended, not for Larry, of course, but for those three in particular, it sounds like.
Oh, it's great. And because there's something so damn funny about it. And then the little black kitten that I described that was the second one that I got that summer. I don't
Yes.
know if you've ever talked to anybody that has had the same experience, which is she never grew. Well, she grew a teeny bit, but she never grew into like a full-blown adult-looking cat. She's just tiny, and she used to try to get on the cat wheel, but she never understood how to do it, and so she would sort of be on one side and jump to the other side, and that would make it turn, but she wasn't running; she was just jumping. And then sometimes she would get on there, but one of those other three cats would go on, and they would run so fast that that little kitten-like cat would just fly off the cat wheel. Didn't seem any worse for wear.
Wow. Well, the cat wheel seems like it's a hit, if not for the intended parties necessarily, but.
Yeah, well, I do think Larry loses weight just by bird dogging it, just by protecting it for himself. There's I put out an album a little while ago, to the degree that one puts out an album anymore.
Yeah.
It's online, but there is nonetheless an album cover that is online, and the guy who designed the cover has Larry on the wheel on the cover. So of course he's not running; he's just laying there.
Real life depiction.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a couple of times, I'm just curious because you're obviously steeped in the cat world and the cat food world. Why do you hate canned food so much?
It's disgusting.
Okay.
And there's, they have canned food now has, no more can openers. It's the flip top, right? But when you peel back the, when you take the, the tab and pull back the flip top, when that last little bit of metal that's connected, the last little bit of connection between the lid and the can, every time that there's like a recoil when you when they separate, and the juice from the gross canned food licks all over, it's impossible not to get some of that on you while you're feeding the cats. It's just gross.
So that's
But
your chief objection. You're wearing some of the food.
yeah, it's it's disgusting. It's
Yeah.
smelly, and yeah, I don't like it, but there it is.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
So how sounds like Larry has become sort of a focal point. Did generally the overall 11 get along pretty well, or do they kind of stay at a certain neutral zones, or how did that work with that number of cats?
Just recently, there's been an increase in fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have spray bottles all over the house. Because when when they fight, I break them up by spraying them with water. I can't quite figure out why they're doing it. Because it's not always the males fighting. It's often the males fighting, but it's not always. And I can't quite figure out what's bothering them. It's not 24 hours a day or anything, but it's annoying. Because as I always yell at them, we're not going to the vet.
A good day.
Yeah, it's and yet at the same time, and cats are so funny because even cats that don't, that aren't particularly affectionate towards one another, in the winter time they suddenly get along because they're cold. They're not stupid. So,
Yeah.
I used to have this one really my cat Severus. He was he was like one giant muscle, Sev was. He was just a gray cat. And then I had this little rag doll that was calico. And Severus was sort of bruiser of a tough cat. It was really funny to see him and this little teeny cat, her name was ShamWow, sleep together. But it's because Sev was smart. And he was like, you know what? I'm cold. I'm sleeping with that long hair cat. That was the only long hair cat I ever had, but she was very popular in the wintertime.
That's great. Hey, with all these cats, I can't help but wonder, do you keep up with cutting edge developments in litter box technology?
I'm sure I don't.
I remember a conversation on this topic sort of we had some years ago, and you were delighted at that point to have found some kind of, I think it was like a large, I want to say cement-based flat pan.
Yes, that you really liked. I sort of have crafted my own litter box, and it's a box that I got at a hardware store, and it looks like a box that they would mix cement in, but you know what I think it's actually for is I think it's for like mixing soil. But it's big. It's bigger than it's bigger than a normal litter box. In fact, it's at least twice the size of a normal litter box, and I line it around the sides with plastic, just like with a rolled up polyethylene to make the sides high, because otherwise they'll stand in that box. It one of those really annoying, stupid things that cats do, which is they stand in a box and then they pee outside of the box. But this way here, they can't do that. And that is the favorite box among all the cats. They, you know, they say you're supposed to have a litter box per cat. Well, guess what? I don't. I have 6 or 7 litter boxes.
But it sounds like they're huge. So they
that's the only one that's that big, because otherwise I just don't have, I don't have room. But that's the popular litter box. I want to manufacture something that I have never, I don't have the language even to explain to somebody. I tried. I knew a guy who worked in plastics. I knew a guy who like made plastic things, and I tried to explain it to him and describe it to him, and I drew it out, and it never made sense to him. But I do think it's a big breakthrough in the world of litter boxes.
Well, my money's on you. I think I would keep working on it in the engineering R&D department. I think you'll get there.
It would be ironic if I ended up making money designing litter boxes. I feel the industry owes me, that's for sure.
That's absolutely big time. So let me let folks know who might just be tuning in a bit late. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. We did tune in a bit late. Why did you, first of all? And secondly, my guest is Paula Poundstone, informal cat fancier, singular stand-up, popular panelist on NPR's quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She also hosts a weekly podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. And I'm not sure, given the improvising we've had to do technologically, whether we can incorporate questions, but at least by email or text at 813-433-0885, we might be able to incorporate a question. Probably not. Not a phone call today, given our disadvantages here. But let me skip around to some other stuff, Paul. I think we've done my constitutional obligation to the animal portion of the programming.
You really fulfilled that.
Yeah, and you did too. So thank you. So so I'm a big fan of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, as are I'm sure many folks listening to this show. And I was thinking, preparing for this, as I recall, there was some sort of weird wrinkle to how you came to be on the show, or maybe even how you came to first hear it, but I couldn't remember the specifics.
Oh no, I think it was pretty. It was pretty boring how I first got on the show. They asked me.
I thought there was some guy, somebody that was helping you look after the kids or something.
That's true. They had. I never had heard of the show. This was 24 years ago. I had never heard of the show, and so they sent me an audio cassette tape. That's how long ago it was. And at the time, the house we lived in had an island in the kitchen. And I never wanted that island in the kitchen. It was just there in the house when we, when I moved in. And the reason I didn't want that island in the kitchen was because I knew junk would gather on it. And that's exactly what happened. So that audio cassette tape ended up living on that island in the kitchen for a long time because I didn't know what else to do with it and didn't get around to listening to it for a long, long time. A guy that was a nanny for my kids, we were standing in the kitchen talking one time and he saw that tape and he said, "What's that?" I said, "Oh, it's this radio show that asked if I would do their radio show." And he saw it. He goes, "Oh, I love that show. You have to do that show." So that's why I started doing Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. The guy who worked there at the time, now he's the executive producer, Mike Danforth. Mike knew me because Mike used to work on A Prairie Home Companion. And I had done that show a few times. And so Mike pitched me there. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And what a lucky break that was for me. It's been really fun to do all these years.
And is there any kind of ongoing ritual or maybe even a different ritual from starting out on the show to doing it now that you put into practice when you're doing Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
Not particularly, I don't think. I try to familiarize myself with the news just because I think it's important to be apprised of what's going on, especially now.
Right.
So I always did that. I was always in a big PBS NewsHour watcher. And certainly I listened to, like Morning Edition and the like on public radio. But these sources were never enough to help me succeed on the weekly news quiz show that is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Because you live or die on that show in terms of, for those who don't know, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a weekly news quiz show, but it's a comedy news quiz show. And there's three panelists each week. And I guess we're vying for the mantle of most informed. You live and die based on the news of the weird, which I'm often kind of proud that I don't know.
Right.
For a while, I just used a standard answer. If I didn't know the answer, I would just say lemurs down his pants. And that, had as good a chance of being the answer as anything else.
Pretty fail safe. Yeah.
There's a lot of animal smuggling stories and, of course, a lot of Florida stories.
Yeah, we're famous for that. God forbid. Yeah.
Yeah. Florida has really kept Wait, Wait alive all these years.
For sure. It's fueled constantly with the weird and eccentric people and stories, for sure. Hey, so Paula, there's other things I wanted to ask you about, including your podcast, which we may come back to. But I want to ask one kind of serious thing I alluded to at the top of the show, which I've been thinking about just in light of all the people that are talking about schools and other people that are putting restrictions or proposing restrictions on cell phones and computer use. Because I remember years ago, you had very serious concerns and thought there was serious risk posed to children by the use of cell phones and other electronic devices. And nobody was talking about that then. And I really, look back now and say, God, she was super ahead of the curve. And any thoughts on that?
Yeah. At one point, I've always had a couple of landlines. I mean, I guess technically there are no more landlines one way or the other. You can still have a phone with a home phone number, but the line is not actually land any longer, according to my assistant. He's always, he's always trying to help me save money. And he says to me at one point, I think we had three landlines maybe. And at one point he goes, you can get rid of the landline. I go, we're not getting rid of that landline. I said, I'll tell you why. I said, because the entire world owes me an apology on the issue of kids and electronics. And I'm leaving these lines open so that I can receive the calls of the people calling to apologize.
You'll be flooded with calls, right?
I was absolutely right. And I knew I was right. I never for a moment thought, well, maybe. I knew I was right. And no one listened. Say that again.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, partly you were basing those observations on one or more of your own kids, as I recall.
And yes, my son was an electronics addict. You know, he never had a cell phone. And it was, I foolishly, because I didn't know any better and because of the way they sold this stuff to you, you know, this idea that you were somehow, you know, my thought was I was giving him a leg up by putting him in front of a computer when he was three. And what I in fact did was he had a full blown addiction, you know, by the time he was five, if it took that long. And then as the schools insisted on, you know, all the computer stuff and all this, you know, things that had been in textbooks before now, you know, they shoved computers down your throat. It just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And it was, you know, it was, again, like any other kind of addiction. You know, what happened is I did, there's a Sunday morning CBS show that I did an editorial for one time, and talking about this, you know, this idea of these electronics being addictive, not just to kids, to all of us. And because I did that, there were various small organizations around the country that were, in fact, recognizing what I was talking about. And so some of those groups reached out to me over the years. And so I have, you know, I've been a guest speaker at a lot of those, you know, at events for a lot of those kind of organizations. Well, a couple few years ago now, they started, you know, parents, smart parents, and teachers too, but parents, only the smart parents, started fighting back, trying to get cell phones out of the schools. Now, again, cell phones were not my son's problem because he didn't have one. He would take other people's cell phones, by the way, so that he could game on it. But he never owned one, you know, when he was growing up. But some of these, a couple of these groups contacted me and asked me to, you know, to, for example, I spoke to the Vermont legislature at one point when they were considering, when I spoke to them, what they were considering was talking about. They weren't even as far along as we're going to remove cell phones from the schools. They were considering it. I don't know, was it last year sometime, I got an email from this woman that, you know, like a mighty fighter woman from this very small group that was spearheading trying to get cell phones out of the schools. And she wrote me just a lovely email, you know, thanking me for my help, which at this point was a couple of years back, and telling me that they had finally succeeded. And, you know, it's fascinating, Duncan, two things. One of those events that I went to one time as a speaker, I would go to hear other people. Like there would be those, you know, kind of breakout sessions like convention kind of stuff has. And one time I went to a session to hear these two high school teachers talk. And one of the things that they said in their talk, how old are you?
Me?
Yeah.
Pushing 67.
Okay. I'm 66, I think. When we were in school, teachers would have to do library duty or cafeteria duty, right? You know, sort of overseeing these somewhat unstructured periods for the students. And there would always come a point, not every day, but, you know, at least once a week, where, you know, the teacher doing library duty or cafeteria duty would kind of blow up at the students and say, there's entirely too much noise in here. You know, we need to lower the voices, blah, 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 right? It was a big, big part of growing up was being yelled at for talking to your friends. So these two high school teachers who I went to hear, and this is several years ago now, they said something that was just shocked me. They said that during those same periods now, there's no noise at all. No noise.
Let me guess where this is going. Yeah.
Right. Because they're all on their phones.
Right.
So they might even be texting someone in the same room with them, but they were all on their phones. They said, no one talks to each other during those periods, which is just such a crazy. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And clearly, harmful. I haven't personally talked to any students that have experienced this, but I heard a great piece on NPR one time about some of the states that have, begun taking the phones away. And, the kids put them in a box or something on their way into school, and then they get them back after school, something like that. What I have heard, heard on the NPR piece and heard, from people in these organizations is that the kids love it. They love it.
Yeah.
They are so,
That's another part of the vindication that I felt like. Unfortunately, we're sort of running out of time, but I just want to be sure to mention that amongst whatever we could not get to for time reasons today.
We're morally obligated to talk about cats.
That's right. Yeah. Constitutionally.
Obligated.
Yeah. But anyways, Paul, kudos to you. And you were, of course, smart and you were right. And people are facing the music now. So, I've been speaking with Paula Poundstone. PaulaPoundstone.com for all kinds of stuff we didn't get to, including great pieces she's doing and stuff where she comments on our so-called president and stuff about the podcast that we didn't really get into and all kinds of things we didn't get into. So we're going to have to reconvene hopefully soon.
Oh, we must.
Yeah, because there's a lot of stuff we didn't get to.
I really want people to go to my YouTube channel or go to PaulaPoundstone.com and see my Hey Donald Trump videos I'm talking directly to Donald Trump.
For sure. All right, Paula. Well, thank you so much for joining me again today, and we'll do it again soon, I hope. And thanks for everything. As always, it's great chatting with you.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Duncan.
All right. Take care.
You too.
All right, now we're going to speak soon with Todd Northcutt, Senior Vice President at Pet Supermarket, about the pet adoption event happening at Pet Supermarket's Lutz location this Friday, February 13th. To hear more about this, let's welcome Todd Northcutt to Talking Animals on WMNF.
Hey, Duncan, thanks for having me.
Hey, good morning, Todd. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. So let's just jump right in. Why is it important to Pet Supermarket to hold adoption events at your stores?
Yeah, so look, I'll speak specifically to our Tampa Bay Stray event that's coming up Friday the 13th from 11 to 2. And Tampa Bay Strays is a local rescue that's focused on helping cats, kittens, and now rabbits who have nowhere else to go. So Tampa Bay, what I'd like to say is there is a safety net for cats and now rabbits that need help now, whether it's care, foster, or if they're just looking for a fresh start.
That's great. And how do you guys typically sort of go about selecting which organization will be presenting the adoptable animals at this kind of event?
Yeah, so this particular one, the adopter is Tampa Bay Strays, but we have over about 100 now out of our 199 stores. You can go to petsupermarket.com, and you can certainly see what shelter or adoption event will be happening in your local community.
And is it safe to assume, Todd, there's some one or more Pet Supermarket locations each weekend, there's some kind of pet adoption event happening?
Yeah, absolutely. And really, Duncan, we put a lot of pride into partnering with our local shelters for adoption events. And, when local businesses, and rescue teams team up, more pets have the opportunity to go home, period. And that is our whole goal. We do this each week in many, many, many stores across our fleet. But it is all about our rescues having, and partnering with them and their volunteers to, you know, execute these adoption events.
So I want to quickly say, in case we run out of time, Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. But Todd, how often, like the one coming up to, on Friday the 13th with Tampa Bay Strays, that's cat only. How often are they cat only or dog only when you guys do these events?
Yeah, so what I would tell you, it's about 50-50. There's times where we'll rotate the cat adoption along with dog adoption shelter events. And it really depends, Duncan, on, you know, the shelter having the volunteers to be able to attend. But what I will tell you, we have cats with local rescues already in inventory up for adoption in I would say 90% of our stores today. It's really the dog events that happen on the weekends to adopt a dog. And what's great about a lot of our shelters, there's an application. You bring a valid driver's license. There's a quick interview. And most of the time, 90% of the time, you can take that pet home the same day.
Okay, Todd. Well, I'm afraid we're just about out of time, but thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. And good luck with the event this Friday the 13th at the Lutz location from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pet Super.